Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
RandomChatter.com presents
Hydra's New World Order, Villarax.
Hail Hydra.
Perimeter Breach.
Agents of Hydra. Case File.
Authorizing. Access granted.
Hail Hydra.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agent of Hydra Case Files. I'm Agent Shepard.
And I'm Agent Stolte.
And you've been tasked to provide support on the most recent mission from Madam Hydra and her operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of Hydra. Your compliance will be duly noted in our report. So, Josh, I just want to check with you. How was your vacation to the framework last week? Everything go okay?
Oh, it was beautiful. Very tiring. And you know, when you start hanging around people that talk in a certain way, you start talking that way yourself.
So you were hanging out with Groundskeeper Willie, it sounds like.
That's right. How'd you know?
I've seen an episode of The Simpsons or two. Yeah.
I had a great time, and again, it was fantastic to be able to see you and hang out with you a little bit, which is very rare. I mean, it seems like we hang out every week, but it's a little different, you know. So
yes. See, we were in person last week, and now we're virtual, but it seems like it was the framework last week, and now this is the normal. This is reality here, so.
Yeah. But I was excited to get back and get into the next episode of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Because it was, this show is really just holding my attention at the last half of the season, more so than any other shows I watch, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I feel like every episode is just taking, you know, one kind of big step. They are concentrating on some really interesting ideas. There's good dialogue and everything like that. And we're slowly moving forward. And, you know, I think I know where it's going to end, you know, that our heroes are going to get freed or rescued or something. But even though there's like four episodes left or something like that, I have no idea how they're going to do it. So yeah, I don't know. And
they'll do it in a dramatic way, and
we'll
be shocked at the end of the season, and we better be have a little payoff next season, because I don't want to end on a cliffhanger and never get to see the show again.
Exactly. I agree with that. So, well, I there's a lot to discuss this week. I found this very nourishing as I watched this episode. There's a lot to digest in it. So why don't you go ahead and give us a rundown on this week's episode, and then we'll discuss it a little bit.
All right. Yeah, I will do that. And since I am no longer sitting directly in front of you, I am back to my usual recording wardrobe.
Ah, lovely.
And I just have to tell you, no regrets about that. I'm perfectly comfortable with that.
If you can be comfortable with yourself, that's, you know, that's the only person you really have to please.
That's right. At least when we're not in person. So,
yeah.
Well, speaking of no regrets, that was the name of this episode, and it aired on April 18th. That's right, 4/18/27. It was episode 4/18. Whoa. What do you know about that?
That's pretty cool.
4/18 on 4/18. Do you think they planned that way back like 4 or 5 years ago when they were...
They said, we need to have this on Tuesdays because when we get to our fourth season, the 18th episode will line up exactly.
I'm almost positive that conversation took place. Well, anyway, this particular episode was written by Paul
Gesundheit.
You have no idea how many times I practiced this before we recorded, and then all of a sudden, my brain falls out. Zabuski?
By Zuski.
I can never get that right. Paul, I apologize. Please don't take it personally. As I tell many people, I can't even get my own kids' names right. So Paul Bajewski, and directed by Eric Lenouville. Oh, geez. Lenouville.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds sure.
That works. All right. Yeah. Welcome, Eric. All right. Well, you know, our heroes continue to fight the good virtual fight inside the framework. Unfortunately, it seems as if Hydra has the upper hand, or tentacle, whatever. Daisy continues to be held at Hotel Payne, where Dr. Fitz and his lackeys continually beat her to a pulp in order to get the truth that they want out of her. Madam Hydra tries to explain to Daisy that all she did was remove one regret from everyone.
Oh, simple.
Yeah, but that's enough to make some pretty drastic changes in people's lives. Radcliffe isn't doing so hot in the cell next door either, and apparently is not a fan of tofu.
I mean, who is?
Despite
really,
Coulson's... Right? That's a good point. despite Coulson's warning, Simmons decides to spill the beans about the real world to Mace and Ward, but it's a pretty hard thing to believe, you know, especially if their world is the only one they can really remember and understand. Now, Fitz, he's enjoying some quality time with the old man back at Hydra. And by quality time, I mean he's a really sadistic weirdo man. Oh, jeez. Guy scares me. His father scares me more than he does. When Mace and Coulson infiltrate a Hydra Enlightenment Center, they discover that our good friend Trip, still alive and kicking in his howling commando boots, and also some of Coulson's former students who are being brainwashed. Now, May shows up, ready to kick some Patriot booty, because she's got some serious augmented strength serum. But the Patriot, you know, he's not just some smile-happy photo hog anymore. No, he is one bad mother.
You'll watch your mouth.
Oh, yeah, sorry, thank you. Now, he beats May, but she doesn't give up. Hydra decides to drop an entire building on him. But that also includes the students that are inside. Now, Mace heroically sacrifices his life to save virtually everyone.
Virtually. Yeah, good.
See what I did there? Yeah. And that means he doesn't make it in the real world either. I'm not looking forward to talking about that, but we must. Well, after seeing what Hydra was capable of and the heroic acts of the Patriot, May is beginning to have some second thoughts about her loyalties. And we may have just gained another ally.
Very, very nice and succinct description of the episode, as always, sir.
Oh, thank you. There was so much in this episode, and I'm looking forward to kind of breaking these details down with you and seeing what you thought of it.
Yeah, we don't really have much news this week, other than just to let you know again, there's only 4 episodes of the series left, and can I just say they're tricksy people. They put out like 2 weeks in advance the little synopsis about the show, you know. And so like this week is like, you know, it said something like, you know, Jeffrey Mace, you know, must, you know, make some tough choices. You know, that's like the description of this week's show. That's, they're not giving anything away. I mean,
he's not deciding to wear the black or the dark blue. That's not,
the Caucasian or the peach, I think was the color choice he was looking for his face. But they also put out the list of guest stars, you know, which listed, you know, Brett Dalton as Grant Ward, Jason O'Maris, Jeffrey Mace, and, the girl that's playing Hope McKenzie, Burroughs, and all this kind of stuff. Well, there was one name that wasn't on that list because it would have been a real big spoiler, and they didn't want people to know. And so when I saw BJ Britt's name in the opening credits, I nearly had a coronary. I was so excited to see Triplett back. So we'll get to that. But now I'm looking forward to to the next episode, you know, where I'm like, well, wait a second. There's got to be other people they haven't listed in here. And I think there was another cameo in this particular episode. And I'll talk about that a little bit later, in our references section, because I think we got a tease for something that's coming up there. So,
Okay. So, you know, I wanted to mention one thing before we start talking about the episode that I hadn't noticed. So this is not one of the shows that I watch with my family. They haven't really gotten into it much. They started the first season and then kind of lost some interest. But
have to be paying attention to appreciate this. And when you start missing episodes, it does make it difficult.
Yeah, it does. It does. So my daughter happened to be in the room, and she was just, you know, working on homework while I was watching it. And she mentioned something to me kind of in the middle. She's like, "Oh, how can you stand to watch this when it looks like that?" I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, because it's got that, you know, the filter, it looks different on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sort of stop and think about, wow, you know what? It really does. I hadn't even noticed that they have kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not washed out, but it's kind
desaturated.
Of desaturated. Desaturated, yeah, almost to the point of sepia when you compare the two. I went and kind of went back and forth between a previous episode out of the framework and into the framework, and I can't believe I didn't even notice it, but I was just so into the content of the episode and the action, the stuff that I wasn't paying attention. So I just thought that was something that we hadn't really talked about. I thought I'd mention it.
That is true. We hadn't mentioned that, but you really were buying into the framework there, I guess, huh?
It's just so real.
It does. It does feel very real, especially to them. So, well, so I know this is going to be tough. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid. I figured we'd just get this out of the way up here at the top.
Okay.
Rest in peace, Jeffrey Mace, a.k.a. Oh. The Patriot.
Oh, I should have shaved the hair off before you said that. It was great. It was a great story. I like how they did it. It worked very well for me. But man, I was really digging Mace. I was really liking him as a character. After a very uncertain beginning of the season, you know, you and I had talked about how we weren't sure who this dude was. Should we trust him? Do we like him? We weren't sure. And now I'd really gotten to the point where I'm like, this dude's awesome. I want him to stick around.
And that should be your cue. Sound the bagpipes. Yep. Yeah.
Fitz's dad could be playing the bagpipes.
Yes, he should. He should. Well, and Radcliffe can read the eulogy. I always think of the guy, the actor that plays Radcliffe from Four Weddings and a Funeral. He reads that great poem, Stop the Clocks. During that movie, and it's with his Scottish accent, it's just, or his brogue, it's just really beautiful. But yes, Mace is gone. He fought for trust, honor, and a really good Philly cheesesteak. So we will definitely miss him. I had not really speculated on this, but hopefully he will be the only one to go. He was the only real person in the framework that wasn't previously already dead. So Agnes and Radcliffe are the other, you know, two. And that wasn't one of our heroes. So I'm thinking we're probably pretty safe for everybody else. There might be other virtual characters that that buy it. But it was a noble sacrifice. It really underscores a lot of the other stuff that we're going to talk about this week, about not having regrets, you know, and about what is real, what is not, and, you know, what's worthwhile, I guess, and, you know, your perception about things. I felt it just really summed up all these different things, because I had a number of thoughts about the episode with the philosophical discussions, I think, that they were bringing up a lot of really interesting, what do I want to call it? Just the, you know, talking about the nature of reality and being. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's things that people debate about with philosophy, you know? What's truth? What's reality? That kind of thing. It really was a thought-inducing episode. So, you know, you talked about regrets and Mace, and I was wondering, you know, Ada said she took away, excuse me, Ophelia, said she took away the regrets of people. What was the regret of Mace?
Well,
I mean, we may not know, but does it...
Yeah.
Is there something you think that caused him to be – because he had his strength in this, and it didn't appear to be caused by a strength serum like it was with May.
It seems like he was an inhuman.
It did seem like he was an inhuman. They never really came out and say it, but when he was talking to May, he said, you know, or are you one of us, or are you one now, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I mean, maybe he did have the potential to be an inhuman and hadn't been exposed to the Terrigen in the real world.
That's possible. My thought. My thought is that his regret was that he was a fraud. You know, because we found out, you know, that the reason he was famous, popular, got his position in the real world was because of the bombing at the UN building in Vienna during Captain America: Civil War. He appeared to have he had a photograph taken of him appearing to help this wounded woman. He wasn't really helping her. He just had tripped and fallen. But, you know, the press ran with a story under, like, false pretenses. So he, you know, and he also had to lie about having a strength. You know, he was told everyone he was an inhuman, but he was just juicing on the strength serum that they had, the Patriot serum and stuff like this. And I think he felt guilty about that. Because he wasn't doing what he felt he was doing what he was asked to do, but I think he felt that he had a lot more to give, and people only looked at him as this kind of figurehead and as this hero and stuff, and that was just false. And once he was found out, you know, towards the end of the LMD storyline, he was relegated to just kind of doing PR stuff. He really felt kind of helpless. So I think it probably would have something to do with that.
I would agree with you. That's what I was thinking as well. And because he didn't have that regret, he was able to really achieve his true potential as a hero, which in a lot of ways for me is very satisfying as for a character that's no longer here. You know, he died a hero and was able to make up for the things that he regretted. So,
yeah. So, well, since we're talking about the regrets, as you mentioned, Ada removed the greatest regret from each person of the team that was brought in. Probably not Radcliffe, but definitely May and Jeffrey and Mac. And now we find out about Fitz this week. And it seems like while we were talking last week about May, and well, we've been talking for a couple weeks about May and her regret that was removed, and the how the saving of this child in Bahrain seemed to, you know, cause the problems that led Hydra to kind of take over. Fitz is also a really strong linchpin in that entire equation. His regret was that he didn't have a chance to grow up with his dad, because I think we found out in a previous episode his dad died and or left when he was around 10. And Simmons had said in a previous episode, you know, it's probably better that you didn't know him anyway, right? But, you know, she didn't know anything about him. It's just, you know, she was just trying to comfort him and make him feel better about that. But now we see that his dad really gives him this tough love, which is kind of the root of the entire cause why he became this nasty person who is working inside Hydra. Like, Hydra wouldn't be there if it weren't for May, and Fitz wouldn't be such a monster if it weren't for his dad, which, what a horrible father. I mean, that's just some horrible stuff to say to your kid, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and for sure, we were wondering if what the regret was last week, and now it seems pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Was, you know, but it seemed like he was starting to have some realization this week. Although it certainly didn't manifest itself in any of the decisions that he made, but you could see that he was doubting himself.
When he was talking to his dad, when they were coming down the stairs there, and his dad then starts to verbally abuse him about that. Well, that's your mother talking, and
yeah, yeah, but also some definitely that part, but also some just facial expressions and you know, just the way that Ian Kastechner acted when he was making those decisions, how he was kind of almost second guessing himself in his mind. You could see it on his face. I thought that was really telling. I had a thought while watching this. I don't actually believe this, but I had a thought while I was watching this. Is there any kind of a possibility that this actually isn't the real Fitz, that this was the virtual version of Fitz. Now, again, I don't really believe that, but I mean, I was sort of grasping at hope that, you know, one of our heroes wasn't this horrendously evil, but it seems like he might be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess anything's possible, but I definitely, I don't see that, you know, that's what they're doing with it. But yeah, who knows? I mean, like I said, it's possible. But, you know, as part of the discussion of the episode was Daisy, when she was questioning Ada, you know, it's like, well, how can you taking away one regret, you know, change everything? And it's like, I mean, it's a cascade effect. If, you know, it's like those time travel movies and stuff where all of a sudden somebody's not there. And, you know, that changes all sorts of things because of all of the connections that one person has with everybody else around them. And if they weren't there, look at all the things that would change, you know, like Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep. Yep. So, Daisy says, this is kind of another lesson that's connected to that, but it's still slightly different. Daisy says that sometimes what people want isn't right for them. And that's, you know, that's kind of a philosophical belief that is, I believe, is pretty rare in our culture, that the hardships that you go through, the mistakes that you make, help you grow as a person and help you become who you are in hopefully a good way. You know, you learn right. from that.
Right.
And you learn how to deal with bad situations, and you learn what to do so you don't make the same mistake again. And when you take those things away, it does for sure change who you are. I love how Radcliffe illustrated that, you know, when he was talking to Daisy through the wall, how even just one simple thing that you say or don't say can yeah. really affect your life. And man, I'd never really thought about it like that. I mean, of course, there's been big decisions that I've made in my life that that I regret. You know, that I wish I could do differently, but I also know that it helped shape who I was, but I've never yeah. really thought about just saying one line, just saying I love you or, you know, something like that.
Right. I'm not wearing any pants either. So.
Do you regret that you just said that?
Yeah, I've been an adherent to that philosophy as well. There are many painful points in my life, and you know, you think about, man, I really hate to go through that, and I wouldn't wish this on anybody. And you know, there are times where you wish that I didn't go through this. But as you said, all those decisions that I've made, all the good ones and all the bad ones and the questionable ones, it's brought me to where I am today, and I like where I am today. So if I didn't have the pain, I wouldn't be here. If I didn't have the good stuff, I wouldn't be here. So it's also just a really interesting take kind of on, you know, I guess the consumer culture. Sometimes what people want isn't right for them. It's okay to want stuff, but if you got everything that you always wanted, just think about what kind of person you'd be. If you didn't have to work for stuff, if you could just say, I want this, and then you get it, and there's no struggle, there's no, you know, so there's, without struggle, there's no growth, there's no progression. It just, if everything's just easy to get, you know, you just, there's nothing worth doing then. It's like, if you're just going to get everything, what's the point of getting anything at all then? So
yeah, that's true. Well, I believe that's true.
Yeah. All right. So how do you know that this world is real right now? How do you know that the voice that you're hearing in your head right now is me sitting here talking onto a machine at you, and that you're not just crazy?
I actually assumed you weren't real. I've always just sort of... used you as my little conscience there.
I'm your Jiminy Cricket, huh?
You're my Jiminy Cricket. Like I said at the sort of at the top of the show, this is that those philosophical discussions that people have. You know, what is real, man? I mean, maybe we're just living on a speck of dust and inside a larger universe. You know, it's like the Horton Hears a Who thing.
I was just going there because you said speck of dust. Yep. Well, so how do you know what you believe is true? This was Ward's question to Simmons. How do you know what you believe is true and that it's not the other way around? And she just said she knows. So, I mean, it's yeah, faith, right?
Clearly one of my fifth grade students. I just know. It just is, okay? It just got because.
Duh.
That's faith, right? That is faith, yes. That is like the definition of faith, right? You believe in something even if there's no way to prove it. And she doesn't have any way to prove it to these people.
Right. So this brings up, you know, other questions. I was just watching Bill Nye answers like 20 questions off Twitter, little video thing. Okay, hilarious.
Well, first of all, I have to say my respect for you has just increased just by the fact that you are watching Bill Nye.
Bill Nye and I, you know, we're really close.
He is my hero. I love Bill Nye.
So one of the questions, you know, was, you know, why do people believe certain things that, you know, like they were talking about global warming, I guess. How can some people not believe in this when it's 80 degrees here in the middle of February? And he's like, well, it's called cognitive dissonance, right? You know, there's what you believe, and then there's what other sources, people, periodicals, TV shows, whatever, tell you. And there's that dissonance between what you think in your head and what the outside world is telling you. And some people can change that worldview in their head, and other people can't. But, you know, as much of a believer as I am in science and stuff like this, I also believe that, you know, faith is a really large part of a lot of people's lives. And, you know, there are certain things that, you know, you just have to take on faith. And I'm not necessarily talking about religion either. I still remember something my 10th grade history teacher said to me. And she was old at the time. I'm sure she wasn't as old as I thought she was, but she used to be a Marine drill sergeant. And now she was teaching world history in high school. And she was talking about, like, you know, asking the students if we believed in anything, if there were any things that we took on faith. And some people said yes, you know, and then religion was brought up and stuff like this. And other people said, you know, no, they really didn't believe that. And she pointed out, she's like, well, you know, you guys all drive now, right? So you're driving down the road. Don't you take it on faith that the people on the other side aren't just going to cross over into your lane? And I said, wow, that's a really interesting way to look at it. Yes, I do. I do believe that when I'm driving on my side of the road, that everybody else is going to stay on their side of the road, you know? And it was the first time I had thought about, you know, believing in things that didn't have to do with religion, but I also don't have any proof for it. Much like Simmons here, right? She doesn't have any proof for this stuff, but she knows that she intuits it. To her, it's real. At least, I mean, she knows it, and we know it because we watch the show. But to everybody else, it's like, well, she's got no proof, but you know, she's got some intuition about it. She's very strongly convicted on this statement, even though she can't prove it. So,
and even she, with her scientific knowledge and her real world knowledge that this is all just binary code, she's moved by Mac's love for his daughter.
Yeah.
And that's when Ward says, doesn't that make it real? And that is kind of like faith. I mean, you know, faith may not be provable or even factual, but it can make a difference. You think about like people that pray for someone who's real sick, and then they end up getting better unexplainably, you know, and a lot of that is the power of of that positive thinking. I mean, there's a whole philosophy about the power of positive thinking. I mean, I personally believe that sometimes I can change a light to green with the wave of my Jedi fingers. So, I mean, but things like that that you can't explain, even though it's not provable, it can affect you. And I think it was affecting Simmons in this when she saw Mac's love for his daughter. Now, granted, Mac is actually real. I mean, you know, Mac, she knows that Mac is in there with her, but his daughter's not.
Right.
And he doesn't know that.
Right.
And so even though none of this is actually real, it is, I don't want to say true, but it's affecting them all. And I actually worry about how it will affect them when they do get out.
So in answer to the question that Ward asked, doesn't that make it real? Like, how would you answer that?
Me personally, assuming you're asking. Because,
if you were in Simmons' place here and you're saying, none of this is real, and then, you know, this guy that you think's a prick catches you watching this moment, this really beautiful moment between this father and his daughter sharing a moment. I mean, what's not real about that? And meanwhile, you're saying all this is unreal.
Have you ever had a dream that was so intense, whether good or bad, that when you woke up, it really like affected your day, like just the emotions of your entire day?
Yeah.
Even though obviously that wasn't real, it changed you, you know, even if it just temporarily changed you. And so to me, that is real. That makes it real. You know, we've seen movies about artificial intelligence. You know, it's so complex. Are they sentient? You know, are they able to think? And should we give them those kinds of rights? I mean, there's been books and movies and all kinds of stories about, you know, that kind of debate.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, I kind of believe that it is real. Not tangible, but real. And I also – these are things I think about. Number one, I worry about the emotional well-being of all of our heroes once they get out of here after experiencing this, because this is not just a dream that you wake up from. These are things that you consciously made the decision to do within your own brain.
And they're experiencing it.
Yeah, they definitely. And the other thing I worry about is what's going to happen to the framework, because these people – quote unquote, in the framework are artificial intelligence. That's what it is. So do they deserve to continue on with their virtual life, or do we just shut it down and go, well, you know, it's just code?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And one other thing I'll just add to that. That was very nice. Thank you, Josh. Is that for anybody out there that's still kind of questioning this, we all know, I think, that what we're watching on TV is actors that are hired to portray these roles.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So the person that plays Simmons is an actress. The guy that plays Mac is an actor, and they read lines that are written by somebody else. So when I see a moment on screen, right, it's not really happening. He's not really Hope's dad. And they're not really trapped in this computer program, but the emotions that are shared by those characters and the emotions that we feel when like Mace dies because he sacrifices himself heroically, doesn't that make it real? I'll just leave everybody with that. Let you guys think about that for a little while. All right. So Daisy has a moment of hesitation though, when she's, in the framework here, because Ada makes an interesting offer to her, and that is the fact that she can get Lincoln back and basically forget everything. You know, she will lose the memory of this pain of being her, which that scares the heck out of me.
Yeah, it reminds me of Cypher. You remember Cypher from The Matrix?
Oh,
Joe,
yeah.
Joe Pantaleone. Yeah. Joey Pants, right. Where he had, you know, been released from the Matrix, and he mm-hmm. was fighting the fight with everybody, and but then he made a deal with the
Agent Smith.
Agent Smith, I was trying to remember the white bearded guy, but I can't remember his name.
Oh, the architect.
Oh, the architect, right. You know, that he would go back in the Matrix and forget it all.
He'd have steak. Because that's what he really cared about.
Yeah. So you think about those things. I don't know. I don't know what decision I would make. Is it worth it to be real, to be factual, or is it better to be content?
I worry so much about losing my mind. There's a history of Alzheimer's in my family, mm-hmm. so that aspect where like I might believe something that's unreal and lose that kind of grasp on what is real, that actually concerns me.
Yeah. Well, I'll be there for you, buddy.
All right. Who are you again?
It doesn't matter.
The question came down to, you know, does one regret really change who you are? And can it, you know, can one butterfly wing, you know, flapping, you know, change the events of thousands of people? And I think it can. And changing one regret for every person, that makes up a lot of change. Even though it's technically only four people, well, five previously, that are trapped in the framework here, it really had a lot of change. And, I think these are these philosophical questions that we're going to be struggling with the rest of the season. That's one of the, themes that they are working with, exploring philosophical ideals. The other one is mounting a basically propaganda for the resistance is what it seems like. So
a little bit.
So you mentioned that Fitz saw through the framework a little bit here. It seemed like he might have had some hesitation and stuff like this, but we had a bigger kind of breakdown here. Did Coulson just really wake up May?
When he looked at her and said, snap out of it.
Right. I mean, it was like he barked an order at her, and she just kind of literally I think she shook her head just a little bit, kind of totally, you know, woke up from it and realized where she was. I was really interested in that because Daisy woke up Coulson because of the connection that they share. Coulson mm-hmm. woke up May because of the connection they share. Now, I feel that Fitz will probably be awoken by Simmons because of what they share. But, of mm-hmm. course, I think that's going to be a little more difficult. Obviously, there's a lot. There's a lot more writing on that.
I agree with you. I think that'll be a little more difficult, but I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And I think it's happening a little slower with Fitz, the same thing that happened to May. So yeah, I do believe that Coulson kind of got through to her, but I think it was the combination of a lot of things.
Okay.
So Coulson is that connection with her or almost like we were talking about last week, her anchor to the real world because of their very, very close relationship that they've had over the years. And I think that definitely helped. But there were some other things that I think contributed to that, to get her to that point where he could wake her up. She hesitated a bit when she learned that they were bombing the building and that there were actually kids inside this building, and Hydra was doing it anyway. It's like they were knowledgeable about who was in the building, and were still going to bomb it.
That's right.
That affected her. You could see her hesitate. You could see her kind of do a double take almost.
Yeah.
She also witnessed Mace's sacrifice. She saw what he was doing. She saw that this person who was supposed to be her enemy, and that she was supposed to take down, and she was determined to stop this enemy of Hydra. And she saw what he was doing was noble and honorable and heroic. And, you know, at first she was going to shoot him anyway. And then she realized, I mean, so a combination of all those, you know, plus, you know, I mean, he threw her up against that concrete wall really, really hard. So that might have had something to do, but wow. But no, I think it was all of those things that kind of got her to a place where Coulson could get through to her. Because I don't think Coulson just going up and telling her to snap out of it by itself would have done it. And I definitely don't think just seeing Simmons or even talking to Simmons would get Fitz out of that, because he is so deep into this reality that he, I think it would take a lot more. So I think we're seeing that in Fitz a little bit as he's questioning himself, and we kind of see just little chips into the brain there.
One other thing I think they also were doing was referencing stuff between Fitz and Simmons. I mean, we know how close they are in the real world based on the previous episodes and stuff. But if you didn't know that, this episode has a really interesting similarity this week in dialogue. So Fitz was Daisy refers to Fitz at one point as Fitz, and he's like, "It's Dr. Fitz," and then later. Mace refers to Simmons as Miss Simmons, and she responds, "It's Doctor." So the fact that both characters were doing that,
How did I not know? That's brilliant. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, I think it just proves that, you know, they are both on this very similar wavelength. And like I said, their chips falling off right now, but they just need to spend some time together to kind of get this, you know, to kind of sort it all out here.
But can you imagine? Now, I've mentioned how much it will affect Fitz if he gets out, but how's it going to affect the way Simmons sees Fitz if they get out?
Oh, my. I hope she just says, well, it was just part of the framework, and she still kisses him, and they live happily ever after. So
it's just a big video game. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope she can understand what's going on. I mean, she's having trouble right now, but you know, I think she's starting to come to grips with the fact that, you know, he has changed. This episode was kind of a turning point for that. So
yeah,
of course, hopefully it'll be, he gets out of it and he'll be like, "I'm fine." And she's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe what you did. I can't love a person who did that."
Well, I tell you though, I was thinking back to all of the bad guys they've had to face, the villains on this series, and Fitz is almost the scariest one to me. He's almost the one that I worry about the most as they're sort of going up against him, because he's so sinister and ruthless. He comes in to Daisy's cell and she's just beaten to a pulp, and he's straightening his hair, you know, fixing his tie a little bit, looking completely pristine and clean. And she's, you know, totally opposite. And it's just, I mean, that's just mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
But hey, did you notice?
Yeah.
When they talked about Mac and his daughter and his relationship with his daughter, they did this week mention his wife.
Yes.
And we had said that was pretty obvious. They had said nothing about his wife. We had no reference to his wife. They did mention his wife, but he brushed over it so fast. It was like it wasn't even important to him, or it wasn't even part of this reality almost. He just said, "No, it's just me and what do you call her? I can't remember. Sparkplug. It's just me and Sparkplug." Then that's all he said about it. He didn't say she was gone, she was dead, she's not around. And I think Simmons noticed that. I think there may be nothing to that, but to me it seemed a little bit like a clue that there's something going on there with that lack of his wife anywhere.
Right, and Simmons also, you know, kind of protected him and volunteered herself to go with Ward to save everybody at the education camp and stuff like that. Ward, of course, questions it, you know, because, oh, is it because, you know, is it because he's loving this kid and stuff like that, you know, and Simmons just really doesn't answer that.
But, do you think that is why it, I mean, do you think, because look, they're both, Simmons and Mac are both from the real world. So if something happens to either of them, you know, they could potentially die. And so
yeah.
Was she really protecting his life, or was she protecting that connection and that love with Hope?
I think a little bit of both. I think because right now he believes that that connection is real, that that's his daughter, right?
Yeah.
So I think she's trying to preserve that and allow him to have the time to do that, you know, to visit with her and stuff like that.
Well,
however, okay. The, you know, her, him having that connection, the longer he has it, as soon as he gets out, you know, that, that might make it worse, actually. You could argue. So, but yeah, I think, Simmons was really trying to, you know, protect him, you know, just give him the opportunity to, continue experiencing that. And of course, like you said, if anything were to happen to him, he would die. So, you know, she was kind of taking that risk into herself. So, well, this episode was terribly trippy. And I only say that because, of course, Trip was back very briefly, but it was good to see him. Looks like he's putting on a little weight in the framework. But, you know, it happens to the best of us.
That tofu, you know, it really...
yeah, really grows on you, huh? So that was a great callback to a character that we had been introduced to in the second season. And... I had mentioned another potential cameo in here. Now, you didn't see this person, but the voice reading the script in the education camp where the kids were looking at the screen and stuff like this.
Yeah.
I believe it was Dr. Bakshi, who was one of the Hydra scientists that worked with Daniel Whitehall back in season two. I think it was doing the experiment. He was the doctor that was doing the experiments on the Inhumans. And there was mention earlier in the episode by Coulson. He mentioned watching something called Bakshi News to the guard. So, and it, I gotta say, it just really sounded like the same actor. So I think that is another, subtle, not flashback, but you know, callback to a real world character here in the framework.
Hmm. Yeah, there were lots of nice little references. Even Trip, you know, it wasn't absolutely necessary that that character came back. They could have done just about anybody.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see that kind of fan favorite character come back.
I think it was necessary they put him back. The fans have been very vocal about their love for this character and the fact that. I mean, he just kind of got killed off, and then, you know, I mean, that was one of our first deaths on the show. It was, I remember talking about it because I felt like they kind of glossed over the death. It was like, did this guy really die? I mean, because it was just so sudden and unexpected. It was a little similar to Jeffrey Mace, though Trip didn't get to go out really as a hero. He just kind of was collateral damage and something that we didn't understand at that point.
Yeah.
And it was really unfair. I hate that they did that.
I agree.
So, well, let's finish up here. There was talk. Daisy was talking with Radcliffe through the very paper-thin walls, which is kind of surprising. They looked a lot more solid than they sounded, I guess. and he mentioned that there was a back door to the... You know, like to the program, right? Another way out because...
Yeah, a way to escape.
As we found out last week, the Radcliffe's normal exit had been compromised. Daisy and Simmons' exit has been removed and or compromised. So there's a back door, he wrote, and that's a good idea. And he says that Ada can't destroy it. So why do you think Ada can't destroy this back door? He said she can... slow them down or put It was like something. It was like slowing them down, but it was he used. I can't remember exactly the phrase he used there. But why do you think she can't destroy it?
Hmm. I think it has something to do with what she doesn't have that she's looking for, which is choice. So
that's
I think
what she was talking about this week. Yeah.
Yeah. She was talking about, you know, what that she wanted. Daisy asked, well, what's in it for you? And she said, you know, choice. That's the thing that, that everybody else has that she doesn't have.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how he would do that, but it's something that, that she's not going to have access to that, that, that a human being, or I guess an inhuman, would a conscious person, I don't know, CC's conscious. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is going to be able to do. How he does that, I don't know. And they didn't give us any clues. They sort of cut the scene before he explained. But
right, exactly, of course. Oh, why do they do that? Why do they always do that? well, I had two thoughts. The first thought was, well, Ada can't destroy the back door because it is Ada. In some fashion, he has built the way out into her. And she just doesn't know about it probably, and so of course she's not going to destroy herself because she's like you said she's seeking choice and sentience and all this kind of stuff. So there's that, but also my speculation last week about Project Looking Glass and the fact that she's trying to use that to get into the real world. If that's part of the program. Like, why would they be building that? Like, I mean, she seems to have this need to invade, return to, I don't know, the real world. So they're working on Project Looking Glass. So maybe that was written in by Radcliffe, and that's the back door. And, of course, she's not going to destroy that because it's the project she's working on with Hydra. So
that's a good thought, too. So the thing that they're trying to create to do whatever to get out or to go come to our world or however that's the way they get out. Okay. I like both those ideas.
And so the blueprints that Fitz, Dr. Fitz, excuse me, was looking at, when he first confronts his dad or when he first meets his dad, you can see the blueprints a little bit. It very much looks like, the blueprints for Project Looking Glass, because that's what he was going to investigate because there were some problems with the experiments or something like that. And it very much looks like a portal. It almost looks like, based on what I could kind of tell in the drawings, it kind of looks like the portal that Ada built in the Ghost Rider episode to pull Coulson and Fitz back from the other side, the ghost dimension.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
So, I assume we'll find out a little bit more about that because it sounds like Trip actually has the, even though they didn't find film in the camera, he had hid it in the heel of his boot. So they've got the film. They'll take it back to the SSR base and we'll probably see what he took pictures of. And I'm guessing it's those blueprints. So we'll probably get a better look at those.
I bet you're right. And the more you kind of give that evidence, the more I'm convinced that that's going to be their way back right there.
And you know what? My best thought would be that I would love it if that's not actually the way they do it and it's something else. It seems like that's kind of really the only way that, you know, they can but I'm happy for them to come up with other ideas. Yeah. So
they could just follow the white rabbit. That's all they need to do right there.
They could. Exactly. So, all right. And then, like we said, we see May kind of crack. And so she ends up giving Daisy some, Terrigen at the end, which I'm guessing this is safe Terrigen because it doesn't kill May. Like that was the problem we had in the real world. If people are exposed to it. That was one thing I was thinking about.
And
she
didn't have any gloves on or anything, did she?
She didn't have any gloves on or anything like that either. So,
I hope that wasn't just an oversight.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, well, it's not real Terrigen, so.
Right. You can write this all off that it's all virtual, you know, so there's probably reasons for that. But so now we're going to see a superpowered Daisy in the framework.
Love the little smile she gave right before the cocoon just enveloped her.
Well, because her words were, you know, I'm so powerful, I can bring this entire place down. Seemingly meaning the Hydra building, but I think in reality, the framework.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's how powerful she is. So
double meaning there. All right.
Yep. quite a few references this week. I was really pleased with this. So depending on how you want to view this, this may or may not really be a reference, but I feel like it's quite a shout out to Marvel Comics co-creator Stan Lee. At one point, Max said, "Nuff said," and "Nuff said" is the way that Stan Lee famously signed off from his Stan's Soapbox columns in, I don't know, they were pretty much published continuously from the birth of Marvel Comics through the, I don't know, early 80s or something like that. So that's very much a catchphrase of Marvel Comics. Fitz was discussing the torture of Daisy, and he uttered the quote, "Nevertheless, she persisted," which has become quite a phrase in the last few months. Very famously used during the Women's March on Washington D.C. back in, what was it, February, I guess. As I mentioned before, there was the Bakshi News reference. It sounded like, you know, it's like a Fox News kind of thing, just the way that they say that. But we'll see what that's about. And Coulson mentions that he saw in there that there was an Inhuman who had lion paws for hands, which immediately made me think of the Griffin, who's a guy that's got like lion paws and a face and wings, and you know, he looks like a griffin from mythology. But the reason also I thought that is because in the comic books, the Griffin character is Yo-Yo's dad. So they've got this, all these super villains and stuff are the parents of the Secret Warriors, Mr. Hyde being Daisy's dad, the Griffin being Yo-Yo's dad, and some other characters there. Whenever Coulson, or when Coulson first sees Ward, he gets this weird itch. He says, "like hives." And it was a very interesting shout out there. Yeah, considering that he was Hive. In the history book, Daniel Whitehall listed as a great leader. And then the... yeah, I'm going to have to get a screenshot of that history book page, too, so we can see what it says. And then when the kids were in their re-education camp, they're very much like Clockwork Orange, where they famously held Malcolm McDowell's eyes open and forced him to watch really violent films while playing his favorite Beethoven symphony for him. And then the doctor mentioned to May when he was talking about all the things that he put into the, what was it called? The augmented strength serum?
Yes, that's correct.
He put a dash of peppermint in there as well, which I thought it was interesting, but I couldn't quite place it. And I think you hit upon it. You remembered where that was from.
Well, if you remember Kyle MacLachlan's character, Calvin Zabo? No, I can't remember.
Zabo, yeah.
Zabo, you know, Daisy's father, right? Was making this strength serum or whatever they called it back then. Mm-hmm. And he mentions to her that he put a dash of peppermint in it. So this augmented strength serum may be reflective of his serum that he made in the real world.
Good call. It was yellow, too. I mean, his stuff was yellow, if I recall, as well, so... Very interesting.
Yeah, peppermint, you'd think it'd be like, you know, white red or something.
Yeah. Well, extract of peppermint's kind of just a clear.
I suppose. I guess, you know, I thought they'd make it, you know, visually pleasing, like a unicorn frappuccino or something.
That's all over the news now, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Sold out everywhere. Scares me. It's the soap. It's the blue soap. That's what it is.
It is the blue soap, yeah.
Everybody's drinking the unicorn frappuccino, and now they're all going to bow down to Hydra.
All right, everybody. You heard it here first. Stay away from the unicorn frappuccinos.
Yes. Make your own fraps.
Yeah. All right. Well, a lot of great stuff to talk about this week, Josh. I can only imagine we're going to get much more in-depth as we continue on the next few episodes. But for now, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of Hydra Case Files.
We hope you enjoy this episode. If you did, your compliance will be rewarded. Please leave us some feedback on iTunes. That's how you can reward us, though. You can also contact us by email, hydra@randomchatter.com. See, you can get through there. Also, our Twitter handle is @AgentsPodcast, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
And you can also check out the other shows that Josh and I host that include Green Justice and Arrow Podcast and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash Podcast. Both shows will be returning next week from their hiatuses, hiati. It's a magical place. You can find all the shows and our back catalog on randomchatter.com. And the shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. So if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to mention us to your friends. Your compliance will be rewarded for that as well. So for Agents of Hydra Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Bidding you hail Hydra. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.